You know, the question always pops up, you know, why the detail? And, you know, that's a fair question. You know, why so much detail on this period of history in the Scriptures? Look, we've already seen, Mr. Clark says it's more accurate than the history books at that time. Well, I think there's a real reason, and it should be pretty apparent to a believer. And that is because it has implications for the end of the time, for all time, and particularly you and I who live in the last days of the last years of the age, that is the 6,000-year age. So it's very important for us, and all this detail is given for that reason. See, we go through many periods of history with very little comment in the Scriptures, perhaps none. But this one we get lots of detail, and it's a reason for that. Now, keep in mind what two or three other brothers have said, and angels are very active. They are Elohim or amongst us, around us, and with us, as individually, ecclesially, and amongst the nations. So they are busy. Okay? That's the detail. Now, we've been talking so much about, now we've got to make a real transformation. In fact, we've got to make two transformations. One of them is to talk about verses 36 through 39, which gives us a description of the Latino Greek Babylonian power which establishes its dominion over the territories of the northern and southern horns of the goat and the Holy Land for a period to last 2,400 years and terminate when the indignation against Judah is accomplished. The Jewish Bible says the period of wrath is over. And for that, we would encourage you to read Elpis Israel 4:16 and 4:17. Well, we don't have time this morning to look at it. I do want to read this, which comes from Brother Mansfield, called The Disappearance of the Kings of the North and South. And you know, that little page there covers about 1,500 years. So think about it, and that's why, you know, it's a lot to absorb. It's probably more than any of us can absorb in one time, two times, three times, maybe 10 times. But, you know, we still keep working at it, and what's so nice for us is there's always things going on in our world. Brother Al helped me this week on this point. You know, he said to me, kind of casually, what do you think of Benedict the 16th? Well, you know, my offhand remark was pretty bad. You know, I said, well, he's just another pope. Well, that's not a good answer. It made me go back and begin to really think about, we need to think about Benedict the 16th, because he's a big player on that chessboard today. German, anti-Semitic, lots of things about him that lead us to the period that we're about to see, and that will be a period of anti-Semitism and probably open warfare against the state of Israel and perhaps even Jews scattered throughout the world. That's another issue. Let's talk, we're back at the kings of the north and the kings in the south. The progress of these two was interrupted by the advent of the king of verse 36. Gabriel revealed to Daniel that both powers would succumb to the domination of the king who would exalt and magnify himself. Thus Rome controlled the Seleucid kingdom of the north in B.C. 65 and the Ptolemaic kingdom of the south in B.C. 30 and ruled supreme. During the next three centuries, angelic work concentrated in the Holy Land was the advent of the Son of God and the development of ecclesias. In about A.D. 324, new developments occurred in the Roman Empire that would ultimate in the reappearance of the kings of the north and south. In that year, Constantine established a new capital for his empire in the east. During the latter operations of the war with Licinius, he had sufficient opportunity to contemplate, both as a soldier and as a statesman, the incomparable possession of Byzantium, and to observe how strongly it was regarded by nature against a hostile attack, while it was accessible on every side to the benefits of commercial intercourse. He was not insensible to the ambition of founding a city which might perpetuate the glory of his own name. This is from Gibbon. Byzantium was renamed Constantinople, at first in concert with Rome. It later became a thorn in the side of the Roman bishop. An opposing system of religion to Rome, Catholicism, developed until a great schism occurred between the papacy in the West and the Greek Orthodox patriarch in the East. Revelation 9 prophesies of the rise of Muhammad in the East. Born in Mecca about 570, he was driven to Medina in 622. The Muslim dates for the 1335 moon calendar years. See notes on Daniel 12. Constantinople became embroiled in the holy wars that followed. It was besieged by the Saracens in AD 668 to 675 and again in AD 715 to 718. And then the sixth angel sounded, Revelation 9:13, to introduce the uprising of the Ottoman Turk. A significant period of 391 years, verse 15, dated from April 29, 1062, when Toghal Beg established himself in the Muslim world by marriage to the caliph's daughter. Thereafter, the four angels became loosed from the great river Euphrates, directed the Muslim power to overspread and subdue the eastern third of the Roman Empire. Thus, the territory of the King of the North became established as Turkey in 1453, and also controlling Palestine in 1509, and Egypt in 1517. Turkey displaced Rome as the king. That's an important phrase. The time had come, however, for a reappearance of the kings of North and South in a latter-day manifestation to prepare the world scene for the final conflict, Daniel 11, 40-45. Palestine fell to the Turks in 1509 when it was incorporated in the Turkish Empire by Selim IX and remained so until 1917. Egypt, which fell to Arab world power in 640, became Ottoman in 1517 and thereafter was governed by military pashas. For a short period, Napoleon's France achieved control of Europe, but this then returned to the Turks. In 1832, the military pasha named Muhammad Ali revolted, and but for Western interference may have conquered Turkey itself. He was granted a hereditary pashalik over Egypt. In 1879, Britain and France took joint control, and in 1882, after a further revolt, Britain became the sole administrator. In 1914-1915, Egypt became a British protectorate until termination in 1954. So Britain became King of the South. Constantinople fell to the Ottomans in May 29, 1453, and still remains Turkish. When Russia overturns Turkey and controls all the territories of the Seleucid Northern Kingdom, she will become the King of the North. So, you know, it takes a while for all that to sink in. But I think it at least established this, that by 1882, Turkey was king of the North, England was king of the South. That has probably changed. Today, and you can draw your conclusions as to who you think the king of the North is this moment. I think we all know that the king of the North, mantle, if that's a good phrase, will pass to Russia. The King of the South has passed to the Anglo powers, at least temporarily. It will ultimately be Christ and the saints, the rainbowed angel, as we have said. All right. Now remember, very early on, from 540 to 1860 was 2400 years. which Brother Thomas says was the end of the 2400 year period. And he said that would then enter a period that would lead us to the final results. And Brother Thomas saw in the time of 1829 a pushing by Muhammad Ali in Egypt at Turkey, and he saw that as a foreshadowing event to the final pushing of Daniel 40 through 45. I think we should read that. Let's turn there. We've read it once this morning, but it's more important than anything that I can say. And the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him. The him is Turkey. And the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall pass and shall overflow and pass over. He shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon, and shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. And he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. But the tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him, therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. But he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace upon the seas in the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. And I want to read the first phrase in 12. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people. All right. That is Christ singularly appearing in the earth. Not multitudinously, but singularly. And he's coming there to save his Jewish brethren, both naturally and spiritually. All right, now Brother Thomas says, countries at the end, countries in 1860, saw the Ottoman Empire, the Ottoman element of the little horn of the goat, the king of the north, the Russian autocrat, the king of the south, Muhammad Ali, the ruler of Egypt, and subsequent leaders until 1882. The two horns of the goat and the little horn all to coexist and hostile in their policy as in the days of Antioch Epiphanes. And remember, hopefully we got through that they were pretty hostile times toward each other as well as anybody else that got in their way. This is a sequence of events that has been acted many times, I should say enacted and reenacted many times upon the ancient territories. The reason is easily discerned. It has given excitement and hope to many generations of believers. Brother Thomas saw 1829, 1870, and was thrilled looking at the end of the time. Our whole community was excited over the events of 1947, 1967, and 1997. Helpless Israel, Brother Thomas says that three entities will be present, the two horns of the goat and the little horn. Now, by the way, when we talk about the little horn, we're not talking about, I better leave it there, the three entities, the two horns of the goat and the little horn, all coexistent and hostile as was Antiochus Epiphanes. The king of the north in the latter days will be the Russian head, indicating that the northern territories will be overcome by the Russian autocrat. That's a simple way of saying that this territory to the territory in this area will all become subject to Russia. And I don't think any of us have any problem with that. We have something to hope. I check my more of my time is going fast. Well, let's kind of move us to the I got to do this. These territories are mentioned in Ezekiel 38 and 39. The territories of Persia, that is Iran, Ethiopia, also including France and Germany, European nations. Those nations will all give their allegiance initially to Russia. And we may have seen a lot of that now, and maybe in a short period we'll see other items. The other horn of the goat, the southern horn, is not as easily identified. We note the territory is south and historically was the old Egyptian Empire. In the 19th century, Britain occupied or controlled much of this land, and in the 20th and 21st centuries, we shall see the Anglo powers as they occupied the land and have become a major supporter of Israel. Note the names Sheba, Dedan, Tyrus, Tyre, Queen of the South, once Cleopatra, all are now all are names that biblically can be traced to the old lion and the young lion. The third power to be recognized is the little horn of the goat, which represented in Daniel 11:40 is the Sultan. We can read that in Elpis Israel on page 416. In 1868, the Turkish Empire, that is the Ottoman Empire, was in the process of drying up. Brother Thomas saw this rightly and in rightly interpreted, Apocalypse 16, the sixth vial. That's in Elpis Israel 418. Again, Brother Thomas says the little horn of the goat will exist until it subsides. I love this word. The little horn of the goat will exist until it subsides into the Russo-Assyrian horn of the goat. That's on Elpis Israel 418, 420. The king of the north, Persia, Iran, destined to be overtaken by the Russian. This we refer to as the Russianized herd of the little horn of the goat. The king of the south, the Anglo power established in Europe, established in Egypt, Jordan, Moab, Sheba, Dedan, Ammon. The Turkish Muslim nation pushed at by the king of the south, Tarshish, but at that moment, Russia moves into action. You know, you think about that in that context, you know, we can almost see what's going on between the Anglo powers now pushing at the Mohammedans. You know, the Iraq war, for instance. You can think about that. Let's take a few moments and look at developing issues. And I want to spend a little time on this, and we're going to look at Turkey, Iran, Russia, and the Anglo powers over the last 15 years. Turkey, and we're going to begin with Turkey. It's probably the toughest one. Fractional, very fractional, with the Islamic family, or a plurality of Muslim, within the Islamic family, or a plurality of Muslim movements. We want to briefly, I mean very briefly, consider three of them. And this is the two publications I'm going to use are National Interest. And this is summer of 2005. Just came on the stands within the last 6 weeks anyway. And the other one is called the Political Science Quarterly, which is summer 05. And we're going to begin in that one a little bit with Turkey. I may have to summarize some of this. You're welcome. You can probably find this book. But see, today in Turkey, and don't forget, you know, I think everybody knows where the United States is, but, you know, here's Turkey. And it's, you know, there's been a lot said on it recently about them joining the European Union and lots of other things. So this will give you a little insight into. This is written by forgotten the guy's name. His name is Ahmet T. Kuru, K-U-R-U, Kuru, I guess you say. It's entitled "Globalization and Diversification of Islamic Movements." I have written on it yet, Sultan. So Brother Thomas saw this as a Sultan when he's talking about the pushing at the King of the, being pushed at by the King of the North. And, but here's what this man says, and I guess he has a lot, I don't have time to read his credentials, but I'll just say they're pretty good. We'll kind of start with Gulen. We're going to start with, there's three things going on. One's called, the three groups that he considers. One's called Gulen, G-U-L-E-N. One's called Haydar Bas, H-A-Y-D-A-R, B-A-S. And the other's Milli Gorus, M-I-L-L-I-G-O-R-U-S. We're going to start with the Gulen movement, mainly because it represents about 34% of Turkey. And this is where they are. I guess we have to talk about Gorus, Milli Gorus, to place Gulen, the Gulen movement. They probably say they Gulen. I'm not sure how they pronounce it. It's a liberal, we're going Gulen, a liberal party. Found themselves working with workshops designed to discuss issues such as democracy and secularism. This group originally involved 50 Turkish intellectuals from different ideological backgrounds. Over some time, perhaps a decade, the Turks were prepared to move ahead. That really means they're going to leave fundamental Muslim beliefs. The Milli Gorus movement was organized as what they call the Refa, R-E-F-A-H party. They approved member. That's the party that approved membership in the European Union. They now, by the way, have 1% of the vote in the 2002 elections. It is thought that agents. It was thought that their agents would form an Islamic union, that is, with other Islamic countries having an Islamic currency. The party divided, with younger members becoming more in favor of the European Union membership and globalization. The former Prime Minister, Erbakan, was forced out of office and banned from politics. The RP, that's the name of the symbols of that party, formed another party, which they call the Virtue Party, favoring EU membership and religion right. So you can see they were moving toward, I guess you would call it globalization and the EU. I'll read a little bit from this book. By the way, this is about a 25-page summary if somebody wants to look at it. the walk of you can take it. It's a little bit hard for me to pick out what I want to read. By the way, this party was organized or emerged in the late 1860s. I mean 1960s. That's the Gulen movement. In the mid-80s, it began to open educational institutions and spread to other parts of Turkey. As it spread geographically, it transformed from a local group into a nationwide social movement. Ties became more impersonal, and abstract principles prevailed instead of communitarian customs. In the 1990s, the Gulen movement experienced its second transformation. It changed from a national social movement into a transnational one by opening institutions internationally and gathering sympathizers from several nationalities. You can kind of see what's going on. See, Turkey was probably most of the populations were centered up in Constantinople, so they spread their doctrine out throughout all the way to the Armenian border. And as I think we've already said, this was an intellectual group, and I can't tell you how successful they would be. What we'd like to just, I guess the point of all this is to understand that the Turks are in, like all the other countries, in great turmoil. That 34% of the population stand, but that means 66% are somewhere else. The Haydos Bas movement formed the Independent Party in 2001 under the leadership of Haydar Ba. They kind of they begin by saying that they were bitterly opposed, I think, to the EU. They consider the EU a Christian club, and they don't have any intentions of being affiliated with them. They believe globalization is a concept originating in the West and is associated primarily with the Christian faith. So, you know, lots of, they feel that they believe that dialogue with Christians and Jews is a threat to Islamic identity. Now, they're a minority party, but I think it was probably one of these fellows that took a shot at the Pope, you know, about 20 years ago. So, you know, they're very, I don't think they claim they're not even totally disfavorable to the Jews, because what they like about the Jews is a belief in one God. See, in that they are compatible. And, you know, there's a big distinction between Trinitarians, or worshippers of the sun and the moon, and it is from one who worships one God. So with that, the Haydos Bas movement is not as considered as radical by some because of that. I have just a... Turkey could remain friendly toward the West and cause the Muslimized king of the North to move against her. And I think, you know, if you read all this, you get a feeling that maybe Turkey is a little bit westward leaning, which could easily cause the king of the North to not be happy with Turkey and therefore move against her. Okay, speaking to Iran, is the focal point of the territory the Seleucid kingdom Antiochus had. Remember that from the map we looked at. If the time comes when Iran, with nuclear capabilities, we've already talked about that a little bit, expands toward Istanbul, expansion toward Istanbul is possible. See, as I read through these publications, the one thing that came out to me is very likely that Iran will if they come with nuclear capabilities, will move westward. And when they move westward, you can see where they move. They moved to Turkey. They moved toward Constantinople. This undoubtedly would cause concern to both Russia and the U.S. How expansive verse 40 becomes, we may see shortly. That's verse 40 of Daniel 11. In at that time, the little horn of the goat with the Russian head, is he seen as he is seen in verse 41 through 45. Note especially the hymn in verse 44 is not the same as the hymn in verse 40. You might, in other words, when you get to 44, tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. That hymn is not the same hymn that we saw back in 40. That's easily identifiable in 40 because Brother Thomas identified it for us. That's Turkey. The hymn in 44 will no doubt be that Russianized, Muslimized, Latino, Babylonian, maybe I should say Assyrian head. Okay, so there's a change in who we're fighting with, whoever we be. As to the developing events in Iran, the old Seleucid Empire, once the northern horn of the goat, and perhaps a later northern horn until besieged by the Russian phase. But since 1979, a long war with Iraq, many conflicts with the United States, and now a nuclear threat. And that, remember, we alluded to that, and I would suggest that y'all pull up Chris Wallace's program that I think played on CNBC. And, you know, it really gives you a real feeling for where Iran is in this nuclear conflict. I think some Israeli, I copied it here. And I'll just give it in my summary. How long will the U.S., Russia, or perhaps Israel allow Iran to work, as in quotes, on nuclear projects? The intelligence now is that they will have capabilities to produce as many as 50 bombs per year with present facilities. And that's a frightening thought. And if you watch Chris Wallace's program, you kind of come away with, you know, a little nervous, or maybe a little hopeful, because maybe the conflict with Iran will bring the Lord Jesus Christ. I mean, all the rest of this will then be future to our day. But there's no question, you know, trouble is brewing amongst all these countries. The scriptures tell us that Persia will be with Rosh, who is the leader. That's from Ezekiel 38:2. So we should look for events that move Russia into Iran. These events have taken much longer than our brethren of prior generations thought. Maybe the thought of 10:14, the vision is for many days, was seen by Daniel and also applied to our time. I think, you know, that's probably, I'll say my time, not necessarily your younger people's time, but even to our time, you know, look, my time has been long. You know, I was born a long time ago. So, you know, the vision has been for a long time and much longer than we anticipated. And in exposition of Daniel, Brother Thomas gives quite a comment on the magnitude of Gog's dominion, and I think somebody's already referred to that, but I probably, it's on page 88, page 89 of exposition of Daniel. And I think this is so I can read it quickly. He says, by turning to a map of Europe and Asia, now this should be in our minds, Asia. Anyway, the reader may trace out the territory of the kingdom of Babylon as it is destined to exist in the last form under the king of the north. Now notice, that's not the Babylonian Christian Catholic conflict. This is the Babylonian Gogian fight. The names of the countries furnished by Ezekiel will lead us to a just conception of the general extent. Besides all the Russias, it will take in Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Holland, Belgium, France, Spain, Portugal, Italy, Switzerland, Germany, Prussia, Austria, Turkey, Persia, Tartary, Greece, the Roman Africa, and Egypt. This will be a dominion of great magnitude, extending from the North Sea to the Wall of China and Afghanistan, and from the Ice Sea to the deserts of Africa and Arabia. And that's the final king of the North. But that's not, keep in mind, this is not the Babylonian fourth beast conflict. This is, he's talking about the Gogian, and he's, I don't have time to read it now, but very clearly he's talking about Gog of the land of Magog of Ezekiel, and he's tying that back to the king of the north that we started out very early looking at the days of Seleucid the First in the early part of Daniel 1:5, I believe. I'm Daniel 11:5. Okay, our suggestion is the final fortunes of this image take place during the period of judgment of the saints. However, we should see the early days of the enlarging of the power of Russia and that conflict with Iran. I think that's what we look for. And this is exactly what 19th century Christadelphians believed. When Constantinople would fall, it would be the saints would be on the way to the judgment seat. And I think that's what we are saying. Time always gets critical right at the end. I'm going to have to skip most of this, but if you get the national interest, again, this is summer of 05, there is a, I think it's a lead article, Rejecting Russia. And this is written by two Russians, I guess, who are apparently fairly up to date on what's going on. And it's talking about the conflicts between Russia and the United States. Here, and I'll just read as little as possible. Russia is clearly not quite an ally of the United States. But he adds, but neither does it act as an adversary. And he goes on, he wanders for 20 pages and says that, I'll give you my summary. They've got many Russians increasingly view their interaction with U.S. as a zero-sum game. Russia under the Putin administration is far from the perfect partner to the United States, but is in actuality, this is true of very few nations. And that's a good thing to keep in our mind, too. Alright, so I want to spend the last few minutes on the Anglo power. I think it's more, so now, you know, we think about the King of the North, what's going on, that's Russia. What's going on, it's Russia when they will become very soon, very shortly, allied with Iran. How that happens, you know, this is all in conformity with Ezekiel 38. As to the Anglo power, we believe the two Gulf Wars and the conflict in Iraq have positioned the King of the South in the Southern Territories to be consistent with the events of Daniel 11:40-43. We note that Egypt is not referred to as the king of the south in verses 42 and 43. Notice in that prophecy, Egypt is specially left out. But the king of the south is at this moment the Anglo power stationed throughout much of the Ptolemy lands of Ptolemy Soter the first, but also including the subsequent weaker kings of the south. There's a clear message that the United States and the United Kingdom will not be victorious in these battles. That's something for you and I to think about when we talk about days of trouble. When we arrive at verse 44, a new king of the south arrives. He is associated with the east and the north. East suggests towards Teman, north from the position in the south could mean Jerusalem, or somewhere between Jerusalem and the Negev. Moving northward, we would therefore think that this is the man of one. Moving northward in battle array, depicted in Isaiah 63, remember, who is this that comes from Edom? In Isaiah 34, the conflict at Bozrah. Okay, so that should, now, I got one other thing I wanted to, if I put my hands on it, which I probably. The national interest in this same article has an article entitled The India Imperative. No bilateral relationship in George W. Bush's first term improved as that between the United States and India. In short, President Bush has a global approach to U.S.-Indian relations, consistent with the rise of India as a world power. This is to help those who think, well, you remember what Brother Thomas said? He called it Eastern Tarsus. So, I sure don't have time. I have 4 minutes. And I'd rather not use it on this. But, you know, the point will be to, you know, that the U.S. and hence the U.K. are becoming very close to India. So I think Brother Thomas's concept that India is the Eastern Tarsus, you know, which was not, we didn't give it a lot of consideration probably over the last 50 years, but now all of a sudden India is becoming a major power friendly with the United States. So, verse 45, thus the Russian fall is depicted on the mountains of Israel. Joel has said in the valley of Jehoshaphat, and then the Lamb victoriously stands upon the nations. So, you know, just in about 3 minutes to recap that. You know, what we look for is Russia will move southward. They'll move into Iran by conquest or by flattery. That's the thing I forgot. One of these Antiochuses did lots of stuff by flattery. You know, that's, I think they used the word flattery liberally because it also meant bribery. But Russia coming there, becoming a major factor, then moving toward Constantinople. Christ and the saints appear and in conflict with the Russian upon the mountains of Israel. Keep in mind, when that victory occurs by the Teman power, those who from Europe who have joined, we'll use that phrase, joined with Russia and have now seen Russia defeated, they turn their eyes to Rome. And Rome, what does Rome say? What you'd expect Rome to say. This is the Antichrist. That power that just whipped you is the Antichrist. We've told you that for 600 years or 800 years or whatever they say. And we, for the protection of the church, for the protection of the cross, we must go get the Antichrist. Well, the Antichrist is Christ and the saints, the rainbowed angel, and Russia and Babylon will fall. But that is not depicted except by inference in the Daniel story, unless we go back to chapter 5. But you know, brothers and sisters and friends, fellow students, we should really be aware that the time of the return of our Savior, it's got to be very short. We may have more things to happen, and as they happen, we can't be discouraged. We have to stand back, look at the big plan, because Yahweh and the angels are in control. The Elohim, the Elohistic body, is probably more operative, at least visibly, today than it's ever been. You know, we see things happen every day that, you know, that are showing us that the Elohistic body is at work. And Yahweh is directing them. My time's up. You're excused.